Hello, everyone.
I'm Brana Breslin.
And I'm Dia Sharma. Welcome to YANA, LV, where we're on a mission to normalize mental health discussions and foster a supportive community. YANA stands for You Are Not Alone, and that's exactly what this show is all about. Here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond, we're breaking barriers and challenging the stigma surrounding mental health. Through candid conversations, expert insights, and personal stories, we're exploring the highs and lows of mental health and well-being all together.
Today, we're thrilled to be joined by Maka Davis, who was born in Queens, New York City, into a loving Muslim American family. She is a teacher by profession and a learner at heart. Maka identifies the central components of her life as being God and religion, family and nature, and tea. Maka currently teaches calculus and pre-calculus at Moravian Academy's Merle Smith campus. So, could you share how your identity as a Muslim has influenced your mental health journey?
Hi, first of all, I just want to say thank you for having me. I appreciate that you made time and that you thought of me. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God. So thank you for your question. I believe as a Muslim, Islam has played not just a pivotal, but a central role in my mental health journey. It's really, my religion, Islam, has really provided me with the highest support and really most wonderful sense of solace in my journey towards mental health and wellness. I find that my awareness of God really provides my life with purpose and so sort of serves to ward off nihilism and cynicism. It provides me with hope so that I don't despair. Provides me with direction that helps in times of confusion and a sense of agency as well that helps if I'm ever feeling hopeless.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. What was the word you said?
Cynicism.
Yes. Could you explain briefly what that is?
So just the concept, you know, that people have bad intentions or that things in the world are against you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing. It's a really important part of how it can shape someone.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think religion and faith has a big influence in our lives, and having that belief can really change and affect our mental health and well-being. So in what ways do you feel that your faith contributes to your emotional well-being on a daily basis?
So my faith contributes to my emotional well-being in so many different ways, but I wouldn't be able to count them all or really even do justice to them all. But what I can say is that because living as a Muslim, it goes beyond just a belief in a set of principles or a set of values that maybe I hold in my heart. It incorporates that aspect, but it really extends to a manifestation in my actions and things that I do and things that I say and the way that I think, what I consciously spend my time on. So because of that, there's so many tangible aspects in my daily life that provide that support for my emotional well-being. So I suppose a concrete example would be the Muslim practice of just getting up in the morning for the pre-dawn prayer, you know, before the sun has even risen, before many people would even start their daily routines or their commitments. We keep this practice of waking up and we do our prayer. And what it provides for us, and I think for me specifically, is a moment of thoughtfulness, a moment of gratitude, a moment of acknowledgement of God and His majesty and His blessings. And during the prayer and after the prayer, I take a moment, and this is part of religious practice, to take a moment and to supplicate for, you know, a day of productivity, a day of goodness, for well-being, for protection from all types of harm. So it really allows me to embark on my day with this sense of confidence that I've recognized God, and that hopefully through my prayer and through my supplication that he's supporting me and protecting me throughout my day. And then as a Muslim, we pray 5 times a day. So I do that 4 more times. I get to renew that commitment and I get to renew that confidence throughout the day. And so it brings that sense of security and that sense of humility as well, you know, not just in the start of my day, but all throughout. And then I get to end my day on that before I sleep. So it's this consciousness that I think is worked into our practices, that we built these habits of, and thankfully I have, you know, grown and been raised to on, you know, building these habits of taking moments throughout the day to be thoughtful, to be conscious, and to be grateful.
Wow, that's really beautiful. And I really liked how you said that when you pray like 1 and then 4 times, like 5 times in total, that each time you have a sense of like renewal and like calm and like you feel confident after that, which I think is very beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting too how religion really is always with you, no matter what time of the day. It's always there, you know, as a way of comfort, which I find very interesting.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that how, like, religion, no matter where you go or where you are, it always stays with you because that belief, like, never goes away.
Have you experienced any tension between your cultural background and your mental health needs? If so, how did you navigate that situation?
That is a very good, an interesting question, I think, for me personally, because I am American, born and raised, born to American parents who are also American, born and raised. I have not experienced any tension with reconciling mental health needs with cultural structures. Although I know that that is something that is present for many people, not just in the Muslim community, but throughout. But for me personally, my family, thankfully, sort of raised me with a very nice balance between an understanding and an acceptance of, you know, Western perspective of ailments, mental and non, you know, physical, as well as Western perspective on treatments, as well as Eastern perspective on ailments and treatments, and what it really looks like to combine and synthesize both traditions in order to live our lives healthily and to receive treatment when we need it. So I do believe in the benefit of therapy and, you know, in some cases, the necessity for chemical medication. And I also believe in herbal remedies, and I believe in spiritual practices as being a very central part as well in not just wellness, but also in healing. So I have a very complex and dynamic perspective, and I think that was afforded to me by my family, and you know, alhamdulillah, we say thank God that I feel that my family really has carried the Islamic tradition in that we take good and we take benefit where we see it, and we do reconcile it with our religious beliefs, but we don't necessarily view everything that is other than as being bad. And so there's a wisdom of looking at what is the benefit and does this align with my values. And I was very much raised on that, and I still practice that in my daily life. So I don't really see there as being much tension in my life, but I know that it does exist for other members of the community.
Mm-hmm. And I think it is important to know and be aware that, you know, even if, you know, one individual may not really be feeling adversities with mental health and that correlation with religion, it's really important to, like, be aware of how there are other individuals and really how you can help them, or other, not even just you, like, other individuals can reach out and help that person.
Yeah, I think it's really awesome how you said that even though, like, you didn't face those tensions, there are people that you are aware that do. So you're acknowledging the fact that other people do, which is, you know, awareness of everyone else.
Right.
So how do you find a balance between societal pressures and your personal beliefs regarding mental health?
So guess I would first take a moment to consider what are some of the societal pressures that exist, you know, not just in general, but for me personally in my life. I would say that work culture is a big one, and modern day work culture, especially as it exists in America, it's very intense, it's very demanding, and so it tends to be, I know for me as well, a cause of stress and a source of physical, mental stress of all kinds. So I suppose balancing that is about finding time around that for the things that do enrich and benefit and heal and support my mental health. For example, I spoke earlier about how prayer is such a central part of our day as a Muslim, but also specifically when we're conscious about it, a central part of grounding ourselves. For me personally, just, again, grounding myself and being conscious and being thankful and being thoughtful. For one thing that I have to navigate when I work each day is stopping to pray and finding that time around a pre-scheduled routine that doesn't necessarily deny me that, but doesn't necessarily take into account, you know, the times when that happens. I also think time from a perspective of, you know, working 5 days out of the week, it feels very demanding for me. I can only imagine that many people are also feeling the same way. And so just understanding that, you know, realistically, I need some rest and being able to find that time, whether it's at the end of the day or on the weekend, to find that rest. So I think the balance is just understanding that there has to be moments of rest, you know, throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the year. And although, you know, as a school, we do kind of have a really nice amount of scheduled breaks throughout the day, sometimes there's need for more than that. And so I sometimes, you know, outside of just stopping for prayer, sometimes have to take moments throughout the day, maybe to just read Quran, which is our holy book, which is speech of God. So just reading that, and that sometimes becomes my moment of consciousness. Other times it might just be sitting down for a moment and just, you know, disconnecting from the technology or disconnecting from the demand of social engagement and maybe just sitting for a moment of peace. So I think that there are different ways that I try to balance that throughout the day. And then on the weekends, when I really do have the ability or more ability to manage my own time, really fitting those things in on a greater scale. I think sometimes just for me personally, just being out in nature, getting fresh air, going for a walk or just sitting outside and bird watching, some of those things also help to just sort of rejuvenate me and prepare me for the next cycle.
Wow, I think that's really nice how you found balance with faith and other hobbies between your work life and found that balance to keep you grounded and just to enjoy every aspect of it. So now we're going to take a short break. We're talking with our guest, Mecca Davis, about faith and mental health and consciousness here on Yana LV. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
You've already discovered that this NPR station is an excellent source of news and entertainment, but did you know that this station is a nonprofit? Public radio is for the public, available to all free of charge. That is possible thanks to people just like you who give what they can to support open access to information. So thank you for listening and for making all of this possible.
Call 610-758-8810 or give online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Yana LV. We're here with Mecca Davis. Now we'll continue our conversation about the correlation of mental health, faith, religion, and consciousness. How would you describe the discussions around mental health within your religious or cultural circle?
I think many of the discussions that we have tend to be centered in faith, and this relates not only to mental health or physical health or just even, you know, hobbies or relationships. Many of our discussions, all of our discussions really, they tend to be centered in faith-based values. So we have a practice, of looking at everything through the lens of what would or what does God ask of us as it relates to this topic? What are our rights in terms of what we should receive? What are, most importantly, what are God's rights? What are the rights of the people around us? How can we do justice to and uphold justice as it regards to people around us as well? So that's the perspective in which we address everything. It requires knowledge of God. It requires knowledge of what he asks of us, what he commands of us, what he asks us to stay away from. And then it requires, knowledge of our prophet, Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, may peace and blessings of God be upon him. But it requires us to know, you know, what was the example that he set and what was the understanding of the well-learned people that were around him. And so it requires a lot of knowledge, really. So what we tend to do is we tend to talk about what do we already know and what are some things about our religion that we still need to learn and what are some things that we can look into or who are some well-learned people that we can ask. They tend to be very beneficial discussions and they tend to be very problem-solving type of discussions. And, you know, you really reflect on, again, what is my level of knowledge? What are my current resources and where can I learn more and where can I get access to more? So that tends to be the religious shaping of those discussions. And I think naturally, as humans, we go through things that put us in a space where it's not always easy to think in those terms because we might be feeling something very deeply emotional or deeply impacting, you know, our current state, our current mental health. So that's where community comes in because we're there to remind each other and we're there to support each other. And so it's about finding the balance, not just within yourself, but also looking to other people. And with that understanding that if, you know, you truly have a good sense of a good support system, that these people will want to see you succeed and they'll want to see you uplifted. And so by reminding you of God or by connecting you to resources, they're showing just how much they want to see you succeed, not just in a personal sense, but in a spiritual sense as well. So that tends to be the culture around it, whereas someone might fall short and then the other person is there to support. And then that very person who, you know, may have been the one to remind you of something just weeks ago might be going through something now and really in need of that reminder.
Yeah, I think how you said, like, the different groups that you reach out for, like your cultural groups or your religious groups or just like that community that you have and the support you give to one another, whether it's your everyday lives or specifically in spirituality, I think having that support with one another creates a stronger community, creates a stronger belief, and just makes it better for everyone involved.
I appreciate that. Thank you for that comment.
So, in your opinion, how could Islamic teachings help reduce the stigma surrounding mental health?
Islam really has a focus on human betterment, but understanding that that betterment really comes from acknowledging God. So when you give people things, their rights, you uphold justice. And when you uphold justice, people tend to be well. And it really first focuses on our duty to God, first and foremost. And in understanding our duty to God and in understanding how do we worship him and how do we adhere to his commandments and what are the prohibitions, and understanding that there's wisdom behind everything. It's not just a set of rules. These are rules that are rooted in care. They're rooted in understanding. They're rooted in benefit for you as a human and then for communities as a collective. I think with that model and with that understanding of teaching, there's really the understanding that there is a sense of duty, right? And I think when you have a sense of duty, it does restrict you in some ways, but it also serves as an upliftment in that I don't have the right to encroach. I think a lot of times when we deal with tough situations, some of them are just, you know, fate-based things that are out of our control. But in many cases, the situation involves some human kind of harming the rights of another, or really, I guess, crossing someone's boundaries, or making someone feel small, or making someone feel insignificant, whether that's knowingly or unknowingly. And I think a lot of our mental health struggles, emotional health struggles, come from things that were really brought upon by other people. So I think recognizing a sense of duty to people and understanding that that duty is it's a holy duty, it's of higher order, it's beyond just a personal desire. It really is, you know, part of the purpose of, you know, my creation. So that kind of perspective that I hold from Islam, I think that helps me to think about, should I do this? Should I not do this? Should I say this to someone? Should I not say that to someone? I think part of that is, I think that is a really big part of treating people well. And I think sometimes that tends to be, you know, prevention is the best cure. I think that tends to be a really important part of making someone feel safe and making someone feel heard and making someone feel accepted, is that they, you know, they know that, that you have a sense of responsibility towards them. And so, again, that goes, in Islam, you know, this is very, it's multi-tiered. It's your duty to God. It's also your duty to your parents. It's also your duty to your friends. It's your duty to your neighbor. And I think that kindness and that that justice, when you stick to it and when you uphold it, people feel it. And even if they don't necessarily share the same beliefs or share the same values, I think they tend to benefit from being around people that are like that. And so as someone who, you know, was raised in the Muslim community and raised by Muslim parents, you know, naturally people fall short and no one's perfect. But that sense, I think, of, you know, I should not harm you. I don't have the right to harm you with my words or with my actions. It creates a sense of safety, and that tends to translate to an emotional sense of safety, which tends to translate to a comfort and a well-being as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing. And I really like how you put this emphasis on the idea that really it doesn't matter about what religion you are, or really if you don't follow a religion, but it's the sense of duty that you should be having respect and kindness towards anyone, despite, you know, following the same faith or not following faith in general.
The way you said it was beautiful, and the emphasis that you had on treating others with respect and kindness. And honestly, the fact is that many, you know, as you said, that some things are fate, and we can't really control it. But then some things are done by other people. And being able to, like, treat others with respect and kindness and not spread hate, negativity, like, negative remarks, or just being mean to someone else can really influence that other person and also just create a stronger community with more positive outlook on it.
So have you observed any changes in the perception of mental health within the Muslim community over the years? If so, could you share your thoughts on those changes?
So Muslim community is such a broad term, and I'll take this as an opportunity to say that, you know, everything that I said up till now is my belief in what truly God has sent in terms of his message and what he has sent his messenger with. But again, there are obviously differing views amongst Muslims, and not everyone necessarily will have the same perspective on what that means. I'm definitely speaking from a personal perspective based off my understanding of God and my understanding of his book and of his messenger, and hopefully with understanding that I lack a lot of knowledge in that, but I'm working towards that as well. But that being said, I guess I can speak to what I've seen from the Muslim community in my area, in my community, and, you know, in America, in Pennsylvania, and in my town. I think there has been a positive change, in the sense of many Muslim community members, not all, but many Muslim community members are coming from families of immigrants and coming from people that, you know, have sort of, I guess, two cultures, right? They have a home culture and they have an original home culture, and they also have a current home culture. And a lot of times they're navigating, reconciling those two. And many of the times, their original culture may have some traditions that are passed down that do provide a stigma as it relates to mental health and discussing it. And so sometimes we find that the younger generation, because they have so much access to not just one tradition that might be passed down through generations, but they also have access to other perspectives from around the world. I think the younger generation of people are bringing a different perspective, and they're drawing on religion and they're drawing on traditions that already exist in Islam, but they're highlighting them because they might have gotten lost or buried with certain cultural traditions. So I think the positive impact that I'm observing is that people are now more open to having these conversations, and they understand the need for a space to have these conversations, and they're understanding more the need of having workshops and events and discussions and lectures and activities dedicated for providing a space for these types of conversations. Because I truly believe that this is something that really exists in our religion as a tenet that's already there, but sometimes we have to rediscover it because there are things and cultural, I guess you could say, traditions that buried it. And so there's a nice renaissance that I would say is happening, which is beautiful to see, because it's not about abandoning tradition. It's really about uncovering lost tradition.
Yeah, I think it's really cool how you talked about connecting back to, like, your faith. And as you said, like, if it was abandoned before, like, reconnecting to your religion and the idea of connection through so many different forms.
So we're out of time for this episode. Thank you so much, Maka Davis, for joining us this evening. And thank you for listeners for tuning in. You can find past episodes and other public affair programs at WDIY.org, on the WDIY app, and on major podcast platforms. I'm Bronna Breslin.
And I'm Dia Sharma.
And this is WDIY 88.1. We'll see you next time on Yana LV. And remember, you are not alone.